I don't know if you're ready to see or understand what I'm about to show you again today. It seems a long time coming, but people are still not getting it. But unfortunately, you and I have run out of time. New evidence that they're pulling it together as I said they would, and they should, because of the way the dynamic is. Again, The Matrix is not a movie. It's time to move against the fiction. And when you don't, the fiction wins. Even though it's a fiction. People can't quite get this idea. The fiction can actually do something. You do things all the time. You think of fiction means it doesn't exist. Actually, the fiction is the motive part of how they're, usually, in this case, what we're dealing with today, how they move the fiction through it, actually the motive part of how they take you down. And because it is a fiction, I'm surprised no one wants to describe to anybody, anywhere, that it is and that it's wrong and that no one has the authority to move by that fiction. Interrupting the current neo-coronial cricketism to bring you Behind the Woodshed. This is Cricketude Busting Episode BTWRLM 386. And so this is a point about where you figure out how they're harming you, those officials, the they, whoever they are, and you bring them behind the woodshed because you, despite all your complaining, you'll still stand up responsible for yourself and say, I'm not going to let you do this to me no more. And here, I don't care about the color of your authority. That's the fraud as well. That's a fiction, too, that you move through and hurt people. But you have no authority underneath the fiction. And this is not that hard to say and state. And yet no one really wants to start to do that. And there's just a few of you. And we're working hard to try and bring this along. But those of you that finally get involved, you realize that the prison that's been built around us is pretty simple to see, but it's a little bit more difficult to make your way through. They definitely have set the labyrinth up that you have to figure out a way to get by, or in the lack of your solving that, they win. The silence is the victory against you. Your silence is taken as your consent. So anybody says you don't consent, your words mean nothing. It's your deeds, as I've been saying. They know in the military side, Libra Code says, you know them when you see them. You know them by when they do their thing, not when they're saying it. And so these little insights have, for a long time, gathered in me to bring me to a point of starting to look through this thing that they've created around us and be able to peer through it. It's not even a curtain. It's just not even anything. At some point, you start realizing you're just looking at the reality of it. And the reality is it's all criminal or an enterprise. Not to complain about, to arrest, to take it out. And it's gotten to a point, it's global now. It takes all the people now. I've been telling you over a decade that this is how it works. And here it is. It's actually fascinating to watch how well this has all been pulled together and how well it's functioning. And it's just a suggestion of authority. And no one says, wait a minute. Oh, complaining isn't, like I said, again, the complaint that they're doing something to you or that you have to do things is not what you do. They're waiting for you just to do that. Just complain, but don't take any solid steps within the constraint of your existing society. And I talk in that regard to be record, to be something in proof, not your opinion, that they are not functioning correctly. They are using fictions. They are using the colors of things, not the things. And then you have to put it together in a package. And that's what the last few weeks here have been a lot of work trying to do that and showing people how that works for them. Again, everybody has you all come at this at your own way. So I just have to wait till someone shows up and says, here, this is what I want to do. Now, do you have any insight? Can you help me? And then I'll give you what I think I know. And normally it's where I think you can go read to see that you then know. But that's where you start. Now, let me start off a little bit here. Talking about injections and all kinds of things and poisons in our system. An interesting little study comes up, and this is kind of close to me because I keep threatening myself with caring for bees. I did, in fact, was able to finish my swarm traps. The one or two little things I have left can wait till spring, likely, but now I'm ready. I missed last spring, but not this. This one's coming. So I'm looking at these honeybees. What the heck? What are these little critters? and they're pretty fascinating, just generally. But it turns out the honeybee venom rapidly kills aggressive breast cancer cells, an Australian research finds. And I just as an aside, Australia has really been in the news in the last few weeks here. So I think this is all somewhat correlated, but not to the point of this discussion, just to point out, they're now finding out there's a component within bee venom, and that it rapidly kills an aggressive, hard-to-treat breast cancer cells. Really fascinating discussion about that. What I found interesting is how they try to, what they have to do to capitulate to the existing medical system so that it won't be trounced. They say that this Dr. Duffy hopes the discovery could lead to the development of treatment for triple-negative breast cancer, which accounts for 10 to 20% of all breast cancers and for which there are currently no clinical effective targeted therapies. She said that the honeybee venom has proven extremely potent. In fact, the research showed that specific concentrations of venom killed 100% of the triple-negative breast cancer and HER-enriched breast cancer cells within 60 minutes while having minimal effect on normal cells. Let me jump down. It talks about the synthetic one. They found out that the material that's the component in the bee venom that's has the killing effect is called melittin. And they synthesized that. What I found interesting is the discussion about that, that the melittin that they synthesized did most of what the natural venom does, which I found fascinating. Again, an indication synthesized things may not be as effective as nature. And this is critical for some things because it's easy for so-called science to say we've synthesized something and it works, when in fact there are other cofactors. And this was a simple little insight that's exactly what goes on. So this synthesized part produced, created product, which they can now make money on, is the point here. It works not quite as good as the natural. So remember that if they ever start offering this to you folks who might need this. The other thing I found is interesting is, okay, so they got this synthesized version, which is good because they can take they can make a lot more, and they can really run tests on it now in the lab without killing a whole lot of bees to get it. And I found it very interesting what they stated about this, that apparently there's a known threat, and they answer it right here, that we all kind of know is going on, but it's hard to kind of see if you're not paying attention. Dr. Duffy also explained that the effect of midolin used in combination with existing chemotherapy drugs such as doxytoxil was a thing that she wanted to investigate. And I looked at that and I said, well, why? We just heard it effectively kills the cancer. Why would you want to work effectively? And then she brings up the idea. She found that the holes in the breast cancer membranes caused by the melittin, allowed the chemotherapy to enter the cell and worked extremely efficiently in reducing tumor growth in mice. Well, what's wrong with that? What's wrong with that is that, well, the melittin does it on its own. What I think they're doing here is they're making sure that it doesn't come out as a way to kill the pharma poisoning through chemotherapy. So if they make it an adjunct to that therapy, they don't look like they're threatening the industry. Otherwise, if it kills it 100% in 60 minutes, why do you need it? Why do you need chemotherapy? Anyway, just an interesting little insight. I think it's fascinating. Bee venom, I've been told as I've been doing more research, that people say they use it for their arthritis and other things. So there's a toxin properly applied that can actually help people. Certainly not too much. But anyway, so this is an interesting little insight. I was appreciative of the insight and the research that there are natural things out there properly applied that can work. Another type of injection that's not so cool that people use against each other is something that I missed getting to in the last few weeks, but I want to point out to it because this happens to be certainly with what we see, the police brutality that goes on and the killings and the chokeholds and all this other stuff and the brutality that officers do, so-called peace, you know they're not peace officers, but they come under the color of peace officers, the costumed ones, to arrest people for whatever all anymore. They use and can call on to be using an injection, which ends up being just as much a poison, depending on how you react to it. called ketamine that's injected during arrests, and it now is drawing new scrutiny. And this is one of the things I wanted to point out again. What am I telling you? The news? Am I telling you there's notice of a problem out there, and that gives you the notice that you need to step up and stop it, and we can do it at the policy level. Even so, if we don't need to go to legislation, you can get them to stop doing this to people. Police stopped Elijah McClain on the street in suburban Denver last year after deeming the young black man suspicious. He was thrown into a chokehold, threatened with a dog and stun gun, then subjected to another law enforcement tool before he died, a drug called ketamine. Paramedics inject it into people like McCain as a sedative, often at the behest of police who believe suspects are out of control. Officially, ketamine is used in emergencies where there's a safety concern for medical staff or patient, but it's increasingly found in arrests and have become another flashpoint in the debate over law enforcement policies and brutality against people of color. Well, I don't appreciate the people of color. I'm here to talk to you because I'm not necessarily considered a people of color. And I say that in that question because it doesn't matter anymore. People don't understand what people of color are. I've told you, you're all people of color. When you go find out you're under color of the slavery that was put on you in Title 42, Section 1981. So that's your color. You're all colored people, but don't realize it. And so they get you colored people fighting amongst things with actually what you call color, and you don't know what the heck you're talking about no more. But these cops, in the costume of peace officers, are killing everyone, and they're utilizing another tool. And this tool knocks you out. Now, if you can figure out now how many cops are now you're seeing on people, and chokeholds all look like they're using Israeli technology to kill you, to subdue you, and then you put yourself in a sedated state that can do it even more efficiently. And so I wanted to point this out. Well, we can get bee venom to actually help us. The stuff a man uses against himself is not so cool. And there's supposed to be guidances on this. And if you don't want this essentially to happen to you someday or one you love, we're going to have to step up as a society and start to do the things we need to have done in more proper ways than protesting and causing what appears to be revolt, and start working at the very points of departure between what is correct in the establishment and what's not. And I say it that way because it's coming very clearly what we're doing as we move into responding to this tyranny that's been foisted upon us under the color of a medical thing. As I've told you, we would have to. So drugs, the pharmacology, they want to keep doing this. It's killing people. We can do it better, and yet we don't. And to get it to be done better, where the system has been rolling into the stinking abyss, is going to take a bit of work. You can't just complain about it. You can't just look at it and say, maybe they deserved it, or maybe that's a tool they need. It says it's to protect them. What's the heck? Well, people are not supposed to be dying under suspicions, and if you'd listened very carefully, it's double suspicions. They have no standard whatsoever. And so this expanding suspicion becomes something that doesn't exist. And we'll see it in a future tab here where they're talking about pre-crime. I mean, we've heard the pre-crime, but they're actually implying it whether you knew that or not. And this all has to do with data. It has to do with the artificial intelligence, so-called, and then people taking inferences without proof, moving before crime, actually causing you to be suspect before you even thought about it. So remember, this is not just news to you. I'm tying these things together to show you that there's essentially, when you can tie it together, you have a little harder time, if you even want to avoid it, to say, well, it's not a plan. No, all this stuff is integrated. What would I say, Grimner? It's all connected? Yes. So moving into now, what I've been telling you about how you're supposed to respond. Now, the injection that you're getting at the time they want to stifle you and choke you out, you have no remedy against unless you work before it. And this is the kind of thing I've been trying to prepare you for as I saw the Operation Hindsight 2020 coming onto us and said the whole point here is they're going to try and further the 9/11 agenda, which was going to push us into the global governance position. It doesn't look like it, but that's where it's going to go. And you're going to have to start learning how to prepare yourself. And I'm a little dismayed and amazed that for all the people that talk about common law, they don't know the first thing about how to implement it. And yet it's the most foundational and fundamental thing that sits there for us to do. And I've offered, once it became very clear that this was actually the medical tyranny, the medical martial law was upon us for sure, because I don't like to pretend I can predict the future. I can tell you I can see some coming, but exactly, I'd rather back off a bit and let it roll up and then prove it, because I don't want to be someone that starts to cause people to be guilty before there's any evidence of it, like the government wants to do. I don't want to become that. And that becomes a problem, because you walk yourself into a little bit of a trouble, but it just makes you have to work a little bit quicker and understand it. I've been suggesting before this thing, one of your options is going to be the habeas corpus. I want to point out, doing some research and helping some people and somebody in particular, in the Tennessee law, we didn't know about a rule. It came through a court case. Again, you read the court cases about particular things that were involved in relative to COVID. Another thing they want to make an injection for you for, with no proof and no safety, and they don't care whether or not it's good for you. It's good for them. That's what they're doing. It's all about their bottom line as well. That I found just happenstance in a lawsuit of the government itself citing to a rule set that I didn't even know was. I went and researched that rule, picked it out, start reading it to see if that rule set in that state was consistent, what provisions it makes, because all states make different provisions. They all say and do pretty much the same, but they get at it all in different ways. As some of you have been doing your research on habeas, sometimes you'll find the so-called form, the list of things in the complaint, are sitting in the court rules instead of the statute. Or they're sitting in an administrative rule, but not the statute. So you have different places to potentially find these things and state it all different. That's how they can show, even though it's all coming under model provisions, it makes it look different. My view is it's all under rule of law and democracy, the brand of rule of law and democracy, so-called, and they just make it look just enough different to make you think it's different, and it's not. It's all coming under the same brand. So here we go into a rule. Then we found what I've been telling you to do ahead of time is actually in the provisions for a remedy relative to an imposition of public health authority. And so for those of you that think the guy behind the woodshed is just blowing steam or something, eventually you're going to find what the guy behind the woodshed tells you, and it's going to it doesn't prove what you have to do. It confirms that you have that to do and that you need to be up on it. If you're into understanding common law and you're into understanding thinking that you, because you can say you demand common law, then you're going to have to understand the most basic and foundational things that were created by people that apparently had greater insight than us, that put these things in documents to give us that record objective basis to follow. Otherwise, we'd be in boy, if you think that we're in a total mess today, we would have been in a total mess even a lot longer and then completely blown away by what people would make up with what the terms they think they are. But here we have habeas corpus right in the rule. I'll just read the one thing and I'll move on. I'm not going to stick on it. I just want to point to you, if you read around enough, if you go through a lot of states, you start seeing exactly that there are these things available. They expect you to know them. And so those of you that don't know them, but talk about them, aren't stepping up into what you need to do in order, if you think you can protect yourself. But what you're walking yourself into is going to be this world that they want, these people want, or you're going to resist at some point in an improper way, and they'll be justified by your actions there. What I was trying to explain, how, let's say, Virginia could do relative to this fanciful imposition of sanctuary counties, when in fact the Constitution in one section explained that their power was even greater. And here we have right here at section 4, I don't remember the rule, the rule number here is rules of the Tennessee Department of Health Communicable and Environmental Disease Services. Notice it's an environmental. Normally that's okay, but with the new service, the new thing that's coming on to that they're meeting with this, environmental takes on a whole new provision. And this is under 12-1404. And for those of you over at Sound Minds, you should be able to see this. For those of the rest, go to the blogcaster and get the link and see it yourself. And this is important for last week. Lots of good feedback from last week's discussion on how you go do things relative, how you answer an order, a directive, but it seems it's, and it was, I tried to explain it as best I could for radio, but you really need to go to the blogcaster, get the 2006 Public Health Act, and then go through it like I did. Do a word search right through that document. Get the text document. If you want the PDF, you have to go to the link just following, and it's the legislative court, the legislative website. It has all the forms that it offers, three forms that they offer, so that you can do a word check. All I did is I dropped into this link. I put in the word habeas for us today. I happened to read it as I was reading through these rules to see what was available, what might be done black and white, cut and paste, and what might be afforded within the context as I analyzed last week's Australia, Western Australia, was exposed to the rule, went right to it. I found this. A person may appeal an adverse trial court or of record decision or file a petition for a writ of habeas corpus in a court of competent jurisdiction, or the department may appeal the court of record decision. However, the person's status as determined by the trial court of record shall remain unchanged, and any remedy or relief ordered by the court shall remain in force while the appeal or writ of habeas corpus is pending. So right off the top, without getting technical, you see what I've been telling you is your response. You have to respond in this regard through a habeas corpus. Apparently Tennessee recognizes that by word. Notice here the status is all important to get done, to establish what I've been explaining to you. And the only way I know to attack that is to go after the fraudulent representation or mischaracterization, so that the status of somebody who's subject is put at least in a question in the record. They say you can't question it, but if it becomes a question, an undetermined question in the record, it does move forward. So important technical point, but I just wanted to have you point out here, habeas corpus is recognized. Now, I want to get to a point, though, because we're coming into an issue, and this is coming up in other people trying, intending to do different remedies. And so in addressing those, in looking at this, I always have this habeas in my back of my mind, because at some point, like we found in Australia, that would be one of the remedies that you would bring out. But it's becoming so, they're doubling down, as I told you they would, and it's the worst thing you can be up against is a medical prerogative of the state. And so what, if anything, I was interested to tell you now, what, find some evidence of the limit of a habeas. What are you having to speak to? What won't the state do for you through a habeas? And it's actually quite extensive. So you have to know the narrow path. I want to explain a bit by reading a court case out of Florida, a court case decision, again, for a guideline as to what we are going to say, need to say. And I want to point out, and I don't know whether I can do this, I want to interject. Every time I see a point, I want to interject. And I don't know, no one's giving me feedback if that's helpful or not. But I read a little bit and I interject of what the point is. If I don't do it that way, I tend to miss a lot of points because we're just in a block of words that I don't fully necessarily remember once I've read to go back on all the points. So I prefer just to do the interjection as I go. That said, I'm going to try and read this through and explain what I've been telling you. I've never read this case before until I saw it here a couple days ago, or yesterday maybe even. The standard of what one state's courts will look at is written here, and you need to know that so that you know what you're addressing. Because what I just saw is a recent letter. They're doubling down on their PCR, their claim of SARS-CoV-2, that they're doing everything perfectly right. And the whole thing is a cover, the whole thing is a fraud, although it's presented as the best they can do. And so you have to, and that's the prerogative they're given to do that. And that's why the courts rubber stamp their authority. And so you have to destroy that prerogative. That's critical. It's what I've been telling you all along. Now, let's read from this court case just a bit. I'm down, maybe 3/4 of the way through, as I normally seem to find the what to me is answers for everybody. And this is a case out of Florida. It's called the Pauline Varholi versus Rex Sweet. And it goes on here around line 20. Generally speaking, rules and regulations necessary to protect the public health are legislative questions and appropriate methods intended and calculated to accomplish these ends will not be disturbed by the courts. All reasonable presumptions should be indulged in favor of the validity of the action of the legislature and duly constituted health authorities. But the constitutional guarantees of personal liberty and private property cannot be unreasonably and arbitrarily invaded. Let me stop there. That's in the middle of the paragraph because they just changed. In this case, those constitutional guarantees of personal liberty were denied because the state was able to put reasonable, they were able to have produce a duly constituted authority that complied with the legislature and the person subject was subject because of her own admission. So there's a lot of qualifiers right there in that statement. Let me go back and let me point out some things of what I've told you have to hit. To take out, and you may have heard this already, in that passage, why I tell you to do certain things the way I'm suggesting that they need to be done. He says all reasonable presumptions should be indulged in favor of the validity of the action of the legislature and the duly constituted health authorities. What I've been telling you to do is go find the one statute the legislature imposed the duty upon the health authorities. And I said, embrace that as your due process protection. Then the question is, relative to this statement of the duly constituted health authorities, is given the legislature did what the court said in the first paragraph, that the legislative questions and the legislature has created the appropriate methods intended and calculated to accomplish the ends, which the court would not disturb, where you can find that the health authorities are not duly constituted under the statute that the court directed, you can then tell the court that the court can disturb actions that the administration of the legislature were violated. And so there's a subtlety here. You agree that the legislature made the due process protections relative to addressing a health provision, and you identify within that health provision that the officials failed to meet that provision and therefore are not actually duly constituted. So I've been asking you to find that one statute, everybody, over all these months to do that. And so here it is stated right in a court case. They tell you, they give every presumption to indulge the government. Because this is some serious stuff when it's true. And they also give consideration to your personal rights, but not if the duly constituted authority is acting reasonably within the ends. And we get to that. What did he say when I read? Cannot be unreasonably and arbitrarily invaded. So reason and non-arbitrary action is indulged, if not necessary and proper. And so we get to that last sentence, but the constitutional guarantees of personal liberty and private property cannot be unreasonably and arbitrarily invaded. So that's the second point. First, if they aren't a duly constituted health authority because they didn't follow the statute that directed them on how they would proceed through to solve this problem, then everything they do can't be considered reasonable or not arbitrary, in fact, capricious. Is exactly what I've been telling you, how to address this. As long as they are presumed to have acted within the methods of the legislature and reasonably and free of arbitrary action, the courts will not disturb that. There's your bright line. There's your narrow path. You have to do everything you can find that's true and factual to take away the immense power that the government will give, the courts will give to the executive. Let me go on to read the second half of this paragraph. The courts have the right to inquire into any alleged unconstitutional exercise or abuse of the police powers of the legislature or of the health authorities in the enactment of statutes or regulations, or the abuse or misuse by the boards of health or their officers and agents of such authority as may be lawfully vested in them by such statutes or regulations. So did you hear a restatement, essentially, of what I said before? The courts do have power to look in the allegation of unconstitutional exercise or abuse. There's another section. Not only if they were constituted correctly and have their authority, did they act within or misuse their authorities even inside? That's another part to a complaint or letter you would develop evidence for. So right here, it's confirming what I've been telling you. Is the appropriate use of the courts relative to a police power health concern? And you have to, it's your burden to find that in the with your evidence, not your opinion. And so I focused in for y'all, I told you first, that we would look for wherever it's found. And typically the code, the statute, will dictate from the legislature to the executive what it's going to do in the condition, in this particular case, the subject matter of public health authorities. The method of which the courts will not disrupt unless and until you can show how what they've done is unconstitutional exercise or abuse, or it wasn't duly constituted, and that's what this point is, duly constituted official for the purpose. They didn't fulfill that statute, or once it was fulfilled, then their actions were unreasonable. And this is, gets into that mitigation side. And you have to develop, you have the burden to develop this. And yes, it's a lot of work. But I told you, if they went to medical prerogative, we as a society are in some real trouble. My job has been for decades now, after I started to observe how and where, is to find where the first point of failure is. And if you don't, you miss. You will lose. Let me move on to the second paragraph. I'm not going to read this whole thing, but it's instructive. I wouldn't read it to you. I would not be telling you anything about it if it did not empower you, if you understand to apply to this, what I'm saying, and then understand how to take what you need, what you have, your evidence, and apply it to that first statute failure, which typically is that the health authority, once they receive a report, is required to determine what the infectious agent is. None of the jurisdictions across the United States and around the globe have done so. That is an unconstitutional act. That is an unconstitutional and unreasonable abuse of authority. And I think you can press that. We have some additional problems, but we can press that. This passage right here tells you that. However, we went on to the next one. However, the preservation of the public health is one of the prime duties resting upon the sovereign power of the state. This is in regards after they're talking about your personal liberties. We're talking about explaining how powerful the sovereign power is here. The health of the people has long been recognized as one of the greatest social and economic blessings. There's your tie to economics. If they affect your society and its health, they've attacked your economics. I say attacked in that regard. Think about what China may have just foisted on the world. And I can't believe, I can just sit back and think that the Chinese political party can't believe how well their fairy tale actually flew around the world when they suggested SARS-CoV-2 caused this as a presumption without proof and no one checked it. However, the preservation of the public health authority is one of the prime duties resting upon the sovereign power of the state. The health of the people has long been recognized as one of the greatest social and economic blessings. These words, greatest, prime, sovereign, are pushing the bar of power up and up and up, which you have to and have the burden of jumping over before you even get going, is what I'm have been focusing on you on for months. The enactment and enforcement of necessary and appropriate health laws and regulations is a legitimate exercise of police power, which is inherent in the state and which it cannot surrender. So what about if the enforcement was unnecessary and inappropriate? Well, certainly it's not available to the state. And that's where you go in on, not your opinion that it's unnecessary. You have to show through the prime directive how it couldn't be possible. How anything devolving from the failure to find the infectious cause, the infectious source, it negates. There's nothing reasonable and necessary about any of that. Maybe they're wrong, and this is the key. Going on, the federal government also possesses similar powers with respect to subjects within its jurisdiction. Its jurisdiction, a second jurisdiction within its jurisdiction has power. How does the federal jurisdiction have a right to invade with mere suggestion the duties of the local? It's what I focused you on, showing what the state statute requires that hasn't been done, that the federal government has no power to displace or abrogate in your local officials. The federal government possesses similar powers within its jurisdiction. The constitutional guarantees of life, liberty, and property, of which a person cannot be deprived without due process of law, do not limit the exercise of police power of the state to preserve the public health so long as that power is reasonably and fairly exercised and not abused. There's your three channels of entry. Reasonableness, fair exercise, and or abuse. You find the contrary, and now you got an avenue in. Not your opinion, how you prove it. What did we talk about last week? Was it suspicion or reasonable suspicion? So I hope that just flicked a switch in a lot of people how this is all tied together, why the reasonable standard of suspicion was in the statute that I picked up was missing in the letter. The legislative authority in this legitimate field of police power, like as in other fields, is fenced about by constitutional limitations, and it cannot properly be exercised beyond such a reasonable interference with the liberty of the action of individuals as are reasonably necessary to preserve and protect the public. Reasonably, reasonably, reasonably. If you can show they haven't had their actual duty constituted because of proper compliance with the legislative directive, which is not to be displaced, then nothing they do is reasonable. Nothing they can do is other than abuse. Very narrow discussion. Has nothing to do with masks. Has nothing to do with social distancing. It has to do with finding and whether or not the power the legislature has given has been fully transferred at the point of what? Actually finding that thing that their subject matter authority is and happening. Where? At the federal, in China, or in your counties? Should be in your counties. And so we're looking at these very narrow, at least three channels, at least right here. The legislative authority in this legitimate field of police power. The legitimate field is the public health, which is a prime duty. And so I told you, don't challenge except the rule of law and democracy has given you the due process. What you'll find is that the executive will not fulfill that. So go ahead and use the method of the legislature to provide the due process and just say the executive has completely failed its duty. This court case from Florida is explaining that to us. It has been said that the test when such regulations are called in question is whether they have some actual reasonable relation to the maintenance and promotion of the public health and welfare, whether such is in fact the end sought to be attained. Isn't that exactly what the mitigation things I've told you attack once they haven't found the infectious agent? How can anything be reasonable? Is it actual and reasonably related? That's how you speak. You point the facts that it's not. And actually, when I think about this, if you were just to plug in your facts that you see in your state, in your county, to these provisions here, and just fill in the blanks of how these little provisions are for reasonableness or abuse, just make a fact statement, you would go a long way to completing a petition that won't be actually that long. Not only But not only must every reasonable presumption be indulged in favor of the validity of legislative action in the important field, but also in favor of the validity of the regulations and actions of the health authorities. That brought up, that didn't, okay, I'm reading to you now, and I'll refer to what I'm doing. Interestingly, coincidentally, before I read this, I was already working on a provision of something that's turned up, and I'm looking at now attacking the rules. And this last sentence actually speaks to that. When you can find that the rules are improper, they allow for the current condition to be on you, the removal of the rule of which would not have allowed that to happen, you can have the court fix that. They set that part aside. And now, if they haven't, and then if the attorneys didn't, or the lawyers for the state didn't write in a, or the legislature didn't write a severability clause, you do that, you may very well be able to get rid of the whole act. Normally they put a severability clause. But what I'm looking right now is they are relying on medical experts. And the medical experts they're relying on have now displaced the local authority by the acts of the local official. And because that's the cause of the problem not looking deeper, pending over due to hearsay, if it's even that much, the power of a Chinese government, let's say, to dictate through the CDC to your local official to keep him in his seat or her in her seat instead of walking out to see whether or not they've actually got something. The rule that allows the medical experts by definition to be foreign to that and prevail in their opinions and suggestions needs to be removed because we now find out that local officials aren't that smart. They need to be guided. And this is how I've told you, you need to look at these statutes and codes are the guide for people that move in and out of office and are employed periodically and temporarily, that these rules are to guide the next people coming in because no one knows. And this is their Bible. They'll tell you that if you listen to them. And so right here, this last one, not only must every reasonable presumption be indulged in favor of the validity of the legislative action in this important field, but also in favor of the validity of regulations and actions of the health authorities. You see, it went from legislative branch into executive branch, and they're indulging absolutely in these acts unrebutted by the health authorities. And the rules and regulations can themselves be arbitrary or capricious or lead to invalid outcomes, which you can have a court take out. So I'm going to stop here. It goes on and on. Really instructive. I hope you get this link. Even if you just, well, I'm hoping everybody's doing something to protect themselves. The guidances are here if you just allow them. They can refine what you have to say. And I suggest that you use them, and as I was discussing, in order to move yourself along as they start to really tighten the screws on us. You have to overcome this indulgence that's been given by the courts. And they tell you they will not disrupt this. Your habeas corpus will not disrupt this unless you can make it, describe it, the violation, the unwarranted restraint of your liberty and your life through this mouse hole, through this three channels. If you can't, it will fail. If you do, then there's a couple of other techniques of making sure they get to the record for appeal in case it goes south to preserve they didn't look at it because the government will try to go out on a summary judgment. You have to phrase your points of facts in such a way that if they don't address them, they still maintain an issue that's material enough to have caused a question that they couldn't summarily dispose of your remedy. And so if you don't do any of the things I'm saying, you're likely going to give the people that want to change your life, because there's nobody making a plausible, actual, factual example and record of how they're doing it to everybody, they're going to get on through. And I've been advocating for years, stay within the black and white you're told, answer to everything that you can find they say is required, and you're going to eliminate all those things that they normally used to just notice that you didn't do and just kick you out. So you throw up the fact and you support it that there's an unreasonableness, there's an abuse, There's an extension of power. There's no constitution. Even though there's a code, the authorities didn't invoke it by doing the proper acts. And then now everything they do is an abuse, and everything is unconstitutional. They destroyed private, they destroyed due process, which invaded your life. Unless you do that, none of your work will succeed. And if you do that, you still will have to. And a lot of people that listen to me that give me the frump, I'm not doing no more. But you've done this before. You know how we've been treated. That's how you begin to stop it. You know we can't stop it if we're not in this final seat of decision. At that point, we can only be the ones that can expose it, and then we only hope that there's enough people around to notice and care. Otherwise, you know we're done. And the worst is going to come on us. And so, another showing of what can be done came up in a little discussion and tale where the authority isn't properly constituted. In this case, to do anything on the city mayor was telling, doing things about doing masks and ordering fines. This was with another interesting point. As soon as they go, anybody lesser than the legislature has ordered money to be transferred and the fiat that you all complain about, that is the connection. As soon as the mayor said that you're going to have to pay the $100 fine, a court looked into that complaint that someone had to bring. It wasn't good enough that the court steps up and said, no, you can't do that on their own motion to control the executive through its mayors, through the body politic, political subdivision. No. They wait for you to come and feel violated because they think until you do, everything's peachy keen. A judge voids West Lafayette's mask mandate, rules mayor did not have the power to issue order that carried $100 fine. Now, I don't know that this was done in a habeas. It doesn't matter what you're doing. The remedy is what you need at the time, and they enjoined that mayor's $100 fine. Why? Because it wasn't delegated to him to have the power to do so. In other words, it was unconstitutional. He didn't have a properly constituted authority to implement those public health orders that way. Didn't that fellow at a case just say that? And so I'm trying to show you that there is ways to approach this. I've identified every attorney so far who has tried to attack a governor's order has failed. Why? I've told you, as soon as they do not challenge the order as being violence, violating the law, does not have the component, the elements it needs, notwithstanding its facial misrepresentation or because of the facial fraudulent characterizations that it has complied. Until you take that order out, you heard the courts won't indulge it. The courts will believe the presumption in favor of the executive faithfully following the legislature's absolutely perfect legislation to counter a public health of problem of primary mandate and duty to the state. That's what I told you. Look at how high the bar is set in this public health field, and you'll realize why they used it right now against you and why we're still sitting 8 months later. 9 months now, I suppose. When we knew back in November that it was the seasonal flu, the worst in a decade. It's all coming out, folks. Let's move on. Maybe I've spent a little too much time explaining that. I don't know. I can only talk and tell you it's important. It's important to understand, even if you were still confused, how they're doing you dirt, where they're doing you dirt, and that there's things you can say in order to at least expose that. Now, the problem that develops from not doing it correctly or allowing them to rely on things because some foreign jurisdiction, some so-called medical expert, I now have a term with a definition to use, from foreigner outside that has been allowed a license inside to displace and absolve the local official apparently of their duty, which they didn't, so you have to challenge that. The reliance on certain methods can be found to be public knowledge to be invalid. As we now see more proof as this thing moves on, thousands of Swedes got false positive COVID results due to test kit faults. So not only is the PCR wrong, the tests themselves are no good. The test that they put together, they claim is a test, can be challenged and should be challenged. here is not news. This is evidence. If they're going to relate to medical experts outside the county, you can rely on the evidence that's been coming out about the fact that they have no, in this slice of challenging the PCR, they can't, there's proof that they cannot rely, and they didn't check. There's no evidence they checked to see that any test they have, they could rely on, notwithstanding the suggestion of the CDC. About 3,700 people in Sweden were told in error that they had the coronavirus due to a fault in a COVID-19 testing kit from China. The kit from BGI Genomics could not distinguish between very low levels of the virus and a negative result. Let's stop there. I don't want to get through into all this. There's a deeper study. First of all, coronavirus has not been found to be the cause of COVID-19. That's a presumption handed to us by China also. And apparently, when China said the sky was red, everybody in the world, everyone, every local public health official said, okay, the sky is red, and started issuing orders. But we find out the tests themselves were faulty, not alone the technology cannot meet it. So, it's not coronavirus that it tests for, that's presumed. It cannot, the COVID is a symptoms test. They can't even do that. Between very low levels of the virus, it doesn't know numbers of the amounts, the load of the virus. Put in a wild setting, the PCR is like replicating things in a garbage can that you find. And so the test that's being relied upon by all the jurisdictions that was told to them, oh, the sky is red, they're saying, okay, the sky is red, that's great, we'll use it. Let me put it into the more context of what we hear around. I've been using, other people have used it, in the context of China or the president or Anthony Fauci, claimed the sky was falling. The governors claim the sky was falling. And every health authority around the world, in every state, said, okay. Didn't even get out of their chair to go out and actually look to see whether or not the sky was falling. And this is the problem and the failure of due process. When the officials locally to you, in your code, in your counties, did not do an actual determination and relied on tests we now know, we knew before, but we now know is faulty, can be faulty. They'll tell you, I just saw a letter, official letter. They don't know that 50% aren't wrong. Well, that's enough to go after them, to my mind. But here we have it, and know that now the evidence is coming. Here's the problem with using this evidence alone. It gives them good faith reliance before the fact. So we have good faith reliance now that it's their faulty tests. Even if the test was good, the tests that were given were faulty. The branding was faulty. But you can't rely on that because then your local official gets a license to have harmed you all these months. You have to now go back to the PCR test itself. You have to go back and even before the test, you have to go back that they didn't even have a duty to even look at it until they found the sky was falling in their county. By an objective basis, not one suggested by a foreign authority. Because what happens when you start doing that, is it takes a while, and they actually tell you here in time, 6 months into the so-called COVID pandemic, the United States has now carried out 2 large-scale experiments in public health. Didn't do them before SARS-CoV-1. No, they're trying to do them now underneath a fraud called COVID pandemic. The United States didn't declare a pandemic. They picked up the adoption of the characterization of the condition as pandemic that did not change its assessment relative to the virus, which they couldn't test for. They looked very carefully at that admission. But we took out supposedly 2 large-scale events, experiments. What was supposed to happen before all this is that your local authorities weren't supposed to be in event mode. They were supposed to identify the initial outbreak and then determine what that cause, infectious cause was. That's why you start there. When you don't do that, you have to start doing things like this, and you find out interesting things. 6 months into the COVID pandemic, the United States has now carried out two large-scale experiments in public health. First, in March and April. April Fools, the lockdown of the economy to arrest the spread of the virus, and second, since mid-April, the reopening of the economy. Did you know it was reopened, folks? Well, they're saying it was. Results are in. Counterintuitive, though it may be, statistical analysis shows that locking down the economy didn't contain the disease's spread, and reopening it did not unleash a second wave of infections. Given the high economic costs and well-documented long-term health consequences beyond COVID-19, imposing lockdowns appear to be a large policy error. This is evidence that they didn't know what they were up against. They didn't know what they're doing. All their measures were no good. That's why they can't predict the second wave. They couldn't predict that it would not spread. This is evidence their mitigation measures were invalid because they never did the test correctly. The test for to determine the infectious agent necessarily would affect our economy. Why? You heard the Florida case. You could bring that forward and say, we know that if you get it wrong in public health, it affects the economy by definition. Which does what, folks? Remember I told you that bar gets raised higher and higher against you, you have to scale? Well, guess what a privileged sovereign power does when that bar gets notched up that way? With extremely high power is the extremely high obligation to know and do right. And so we now can use the back ends of that sword against the official. You had no authority to take the opinion and suggestion of a foreigner over what you needed to do and were delegated to do for the people in your county, essentially. This goes to your governors as well, since they were the one that did all the fraudulent orders. So, what's the effect? We go down and we find out if you get it wrong, if these tests are wrong, it affects you, terribly affects you. You create a disaster, what everyone's observing. What's gone on since the cure was worse than the cause. Well, it wasn't a cure. Remember, there's nothing here. Remember that. Don't forget that. We keep talking like something's there. There was nothing. And there's nobody in the world that can prove my statement wrong right now. If you get that part. You want to talk about feeling pretty arrogant about saying that and convicted? Boy, that's one thing I'm holding on that for dear life, because that is the defense against their purported authority. You had no way to know. And all the suggestions and all the so-called medical experts told you that if you hadn't cherry-picked the information. So, not only was the PCR no good, the tests are no good, and when you didn't do it, we do a check now. When your mitigation measures didn't stop it, and when we got everybody back to going, if you even knew that was a possibility, we were going again, folks. The economy's fine, right? I didn't know about that since April. And it doesn't show any change. Okay, that's evidence. Their mitigation, if we were to extend, and the alternative is to give them the power, and to give them their PCR, they were wrong. And that just reproves that they were wrong, that the PCR was wrong. How do we know that? They knew that. This is why you get ahead of what Sweden tells us. You get ahead about it because they knew back in the whooping cough fiasco that the PCR could not be justified to use to find out what a cause of what everyone, all medical professionals thought was whooping cough and wasn't. They used the PCR. Another effect of getting it wrong, where if you can build in your case, and this is what I start to do, and I'm trying to get people to do, where their case intends or needs to, because they intend a certain mitigation remedy. This story comes up to explain exactly what everyone's known. It doesn't mean anything unless you can make the evidentiary statements to show that there was a method, there was an ulterior motive, what the motive, the method, and then what its outcome was to be. And then we can talk relative to an attack on this country, whether by dereliction of duty, incompetence, or complicitly with an enemy. You can now start showing how these, why the books were cooked. You have the evidence that the books were cooked. You also show here that the so-called medical experts at the federal side can get it terribly wrong, and that now focuses more obligation on the locals to not listen to anyone, but look directly at reality that they can find. Stop taking the suggestions. They knew about not using PCR back at the Woofycoff fiasco, so I'm taking away their good faith reliance of an actual medical professional and saying, if you didn't know this, then maybe you're incompetent and not a medical professional, notwithstanding the office or employment that you have. I say a lot of words here. Those are made into fact statements to challenge the authority, to challenge the authority up front, the duly constituted authority. You challenge it up front. You challenge that they were even have the right and capacity when they started to into the problem, that they were incapable of doing it. In fact, you can say because they were incapable, they took reliance on foreign hearsay without testing it. There's no requirement that in anything I've found that they have to take medical advice outside foreign suggestion as dispositive of what they need to do, and that ABRA absolves them of their duty locally. New CDC report shows 94% of COVID-19 deaths in the U.S. had contributing conditions. Can I hear a no? Duh. Do we even need to know? I mean, of course. You've heard it behind the woodshed forever since I've been talking about this. The comorbidities question. Since this was an agenda, they were utilizing the tools which advanced the agenda. They needed numbers that advanced the plausible pandemic, when in fact they were utilizing all the numbers of death to just push the agenda without looking at the fact that they were doing anything proper. Now, we now come out, they start to adjust, and you have to go to a news article. I went to a news article to find it, then it gives me the fact of the charting that you'll use to see it from the CDC. The news comes and tells us that there's a problem. Lots of people are passing this around. 94% of the COVID deaths in the U.S. had contributing conditions. No, it actually was. They had comorbidities that actually, like 2.6 times more prevalent, that they were listed as a so-called COVID death. In fact, 94% were caused by things like obesity, diabetes. But I talk about malnutrition, folks. If they wanted to solve this, one of the things they know that stops flu-like symptoms is to get your nutrition proper. 94% of COVID deaths were not COVID deaths. There's a lie in here as well that implies 6% were. How could that be that they know 6% were caused by the flu-like symptoms when facially that's a wrong statement? And if you give them that they needed to, they even presumed that they had an infectious agent for the symptoms, there was no test. 100% of this report is inaccurate. But it's 100% accurate to tell you that you can't rely on their information. Another thing you get to defeat. That the local official should have in their investigation, in their determination, had somewhere where they figured on the comorbidity problem that they already know. Again, you take away their good faith reliance and you take out the fact that they didn't actually do what they were required to do under the law. I'm positive, folks, do you get that? 94% of COVID deaths attributed to COVID, even as symptoms, don't exist. And if they don't exist, then what are the numbers? And they drive everything by numbers. And if you're writing a complaint, you get to point to that. You get to say, these were all misrepresented numbers. All the cases are misrepresented cases. because cases are an investigation. And there's no evidence of the investigation. What there's evidence of is someone took the CDC's word, which they're now saying and proving, well, you didn't need to, this is not new information. This is just them admitting it, that they're not the expert that they claim to be, that they can cook the books. And as I mentioned to someone, cooking the books is not within the purview of this delegation of authority in the statutes. You say that. So you go to the table, look down at comorbidities, you find all kinds of people dying from all kinds of things that are not the flu even. In fact, there is one heading for flu and pneumonia. It's there. Not inconsequential either. 94% of what you've been told doesn't exist. Australian's government, moving on, their own website admits COVID tests are totally unreliable. If you need now to dethrone the sovereign here, as you heard the Florida case saying, and now you have to go further and further to find the proof. And this became a problem when none of you stepped up early, and I told you they're going to get the precedent they need to make the presumption stick. And the courts will stop looking at anything you have to say. That makes your job even more tough. Here's how you start to do it. And this is what I'm looking at doing for people. I'm saying we're going to have to go farther to get more information because we still have to defeat the fact that they keep on relying on things. They have continue to take good faith reliance. Australian government's own website admits COVID tests are totally unreliable. Therapeutic Goods Administration, a government office, claims that this is little evidence, quote, little evidence to assess, quote, clinical utility of PCR or blood tests, which are what? PCR. Right? Clinical utility, we've said over and over, you can't use, the inventor said it, you can't use this PCR tool, research tool, in a clinical setting. And there's little evidence to assess its utility. Well, we don't need the evidence. It's not made to do that. So even on their own website, Australia, which is locking y'all down, and I told you how you have to go after those orders, even now they're even arresting pregnant women for so-called inciting people to come together to talk about it outside. They need to hear behind the woodshed. Nobody I know that I was trying to help explain this to the other broadcasters out there, other YouTubers, none I know listened to my broadcast or offered that they had heard it and would not listen, you know, thought there was a problem, nor did they say they listened and thank you. Nobody. Those of you in Australia that aren't doing it and aren't listening are almost deserving what you get. But a pregnant woman that just says, listen, we got to get together, we got to talk about this, this is wrong, and then gets arrested for inciting on something that they claim, that Australia itself claims the test they use to produce the evidence of the cases is faulty, has no known utility in a clinical setting, is on their website. But we'll read any more. Fascinating stuff right here. COVID-19 testing in Australia and formation for professionals is what you can read as the direct discussion from the government. One was a news article. Second one's actually from the website, the link you get. Again, these are not just for news. These are the evidence that you would pull together. Tests for COVID-19 aim to detect the causative virus SARS-CoV-2 or an immune response to SARS-CoV-2 is the leading opening sentence. That's the aim. They don't say that it does. The causative virus, that's not been proven. But they do admit it's for an immune response to SARS-CoV-2. You could just say an immune response to anything. And that would be a correct statement. Why? Because the PCR instruction diagnostic panel explains you can test for this RNA, but that RNA doesn't prove it's SARS-CoV-2. In fact, it doesn't discount that it might have been a bacterial or other problem. It's right in the test panel. The reliability of the COVID test is uncertain due to the limited evidence base. Well, they're testing like crazy, folks. But see, it's limited evidence in science. They've not done science. This little website here is really particularly cool. They explain how it's not to be used, actually. And this is what I would say you can bring in. This is a country that relies on the CDC. I think that one article says that United States CDC is like the dog wagging the tail. And so all these countries follow a lot of this, but they all say the same thing. This is stated very clearly. The reliability of COVID-19 tests is uncertain due to limited evidence base. Because there's no evidence here. There's no way to use this and prove anything. You might maybe use it to kind of get an idea, but what's the idea? The idea is that you've had an immune response. Didn't they just say that in the first sentence? Well, didn't I say that behind a woodshed months and months ago? This is not new. This is not news. Twitter's up a fire of this stuff. I wondered why they didn't all just get the behind the woodshed about like 8 months ago, and we solved this. I feel like I'm like Rodney Dangerfield. I get no respect. It's right here to read. It's been right here to read. And I still see societies around the globe getting beat down. Just a few people doing it. They're moving on. I get really irritated just thinking about this. Reliability of the test uncertain. Okay, available evidence mainly comes from symptomatic patients, and their critical role in detecting asymptomatic carriers is unclear. No, it's very clear. They can detect asymptomatic, but they're not carriers. There's no infectious agent after 14 days. The indications of conducting COVID-19 tests have changed through the course of the pandemic. See the current suspect case definition and the test criteria of the Department of Health website. Three main types of SARS-CoV-2 tests are, listen carefully, folks, facial fraud. Number one, nucleic acid detection test to detect SARS-CoV-2 viral ribonucleic acid, RNA. Rapid antigen tests to detect antigen viral proteins from SARS-CoV-2 virus and serology tests to detect IgM or IgG antibodies against SARS-CoV-2 are all the same useless test in different forms looking at different things, but all looking at antibodies, antigens that your body, your immune system responded. None prove SARS-CoV-2 as the cause. Enough said there. This is a perfect website for evidence for those of you. If you're needing to expand to prove that there's no reliance that is taken by your local government, I'm saying this is very important because I just saw the proof, official letter, that they used PCR and SARS-CoV-2 as their reliance, that it's set and done. And yet you see other places that are being honest, and you tell them that in your fact complaint, other medical places that are honest will tell you it's unreliable. And they knew or should have known that. Then you state that whooping cough, that they should have known that because of this case right here, this whooping cough fiasco. Bring that proof in. You don't just object, you give them the foundation for why you object. Then we hear this. If we didn't understand this was a plan and setup, and this just breaking, in fact, I don't even know if anybody got this one. All this stuff came right before the broadcast. Came right before the broadcast. I think it started with Sholley pointing out a 2018 worldbank.org proof, and then I got an email from Gary L., and I hope you guys aren't insult that I'm giving you out. I'm outing you for helping me here. You provide a 2017 link to the World Bank, folks. I tell you, this is all economic destruction. That we read just this title. Oh, I don't have to say anymore. Although I know Australia got these. COVID-19 test kits, 38220 exports by country. And when do you think they got those exports? Exports by country in 2017, and I have a link for 2018. COVID-19 test kits in 2017 and 2018. And a lot of people, oh yeah, there's the proof. No, you got to know how to use the proof. That was listed before anything happened. The power for this is not just in either one. It's that you see that it was identified before it even was identified, and there was test kits going on that we already found out were no good coming from China. But more importantly, Remember, and those of you that like maxims, and those of you that like canons of law, and those of you that like the foundations of how you pull things together, the rules of evidence and things like that, things I don't usually speak to. Things I don't cite, but I speak to them in my documents. I would point out that there are two witnesses that test kits for an unknown thing, a novel thing, were known back in 2017, making it not novel, not unknown, and something there was tests for that are faulty today. Those two links become two witnesses that the fact you're seeing is likely right, likely good. Why? Because you're up against an indulgence that won't see the light of day unless you actually start to beat it down hard. And so you have two links, 2 years, they confirm, one link wasn't an accident, and the second link wasn't an accident on its own, but together they show a uniformity, a consistency, a thing done by the World Bank, one of the economic powerhouses in the world. Now, if you're building without, and I don't want to have you go lots of far afield, if you're building one theme within your fact statements that shows a reason, an underlying reason for why they're doing this to you, this on a global side, tying it into China, as I told you, the pivot to China and the economic thing, a downturn, the economic twist that was going on to bring in communism essentially across the globe, all this digital stuff that you have, that Obama was cool with that they are bringing in, and it's going to settle in on your economic function, like we saw Agenda 2030. You don't say all this to the court paper. What I'm saying is that's the lineage for you to know that you speak to facts that prove those things. You see that this is evidence from the World Bank through the World Integrated Trade Solutions website that they've had some COVID-19 test before the novel COVID even hit China with its suggestion. And since it's only presumptive and there is no test, we can now move this as an element of a giant attack. And the World Bank is involved. Now, do I press that first? No. This is not one of those things you press first. They'll just dismiss you. Once you build the evidence and you try to, then you have the right to write in your complaint why an official might, to seal the fate, so to speak. Why didn't they look at the local statute? Why they didn't do objective basis? Why they took a foreigner's hearsay suggestion? And you start to put this in the context of a plan of destruction where we have people secreting themselves in covert ways into the system in order to destroy the system, you start bringing a much more plausible proof and facts that becomes an issue to have to be resolved, that they can't summary dismiss. I don't rely on that one. I rely on the more foundational point. But if I have the opportunity to bring up a larger cause, because this is a global problem and everybody's doing the same thing, I have a lot of elements to show this is an orchestrated, organized attack. And you put on the other side that it's not. Then now they have to answer why they use this test that doesn't work. Why they want to rely on some good faith reliance that doesn't exist. Why they didn't do their job. Anyway, you press them. You press them for what it is. This is fascinating stuff to see. I wouldn't rest my whole case on it. This is support of an aspect of what your complaint would be to offer. How would these COVID-19 novel COVID tests exist before COVID-19 if it was novel? Why are there secondary evidence to prove each one? This is not just an accident. There was a consecutive action here. Now, there might be more. I don't know. But thank you to Shali and Gary L. just bringing this forward. I'm interested in these, not so much on what I found. Be careful now, too, I'm not saying it's not there. I did not get the proof on one image I saw of utilizing a 2008 reference for referencing COVID-19 on a report from the World Bank. The report I found that referenced the same chart was actually from 2020. However, these WITS links, they are from the World Bank link website, and they are relatable in time because they say so right on their titles. Referencing a novel thing years before it ever happened. Now, there's a proof about the PCR problem, and I'm going to give you a link again. You could listen the whole thing. You should, if you haven't been aware of what's going on. You should have some capacity to understand what I've told you about the words they use and what they mean. The most important thing of this link, it's a David Geffen School of Medicine, UCLA, is in the question and answer section where and you'd need to get the guy's name and where he's from so you can cite to it. And you would want to cite to this position. You even want to take a transcript of it from I think it offers it from Google. Copy that in there so you have it available. You make a reference to it that what this guy says in the question and answers, you put those as fact statements and you focus on the fact of what he says that shows they know they have a problem with all this about the asymptomatic problem. And whether or not you hold that back or you preload an anticipatory defense against the response, these statements from these officials are sufficient to bring the question that there's known unreliable conditions within this test that the local official knew or should have known not to rely on and look further. And until they do, they don't have the duly constituted authority given to them through that statute the legislature decided was the method they would use. See, I tie that back into your statute. Now, more and more about these tests. This is not the only thing you focus on, but this is critical to understand. I've been telling people you really need to take some time and understand what this PCR is and what it's not. And once you see it, and you understand the terminology and you settle that in foundation like concrete, and you don't deviate from the terms they use, and you always have them mean what they actually mean, this thing is not a question anymore. It certainly is not to me. And so John Rappaport has been on the leading edge of this. If you needed narratives, discussions, statements, John Rappaport does it again here. COVID test, overwhelming numbers of false positives. He'll give you another thing you can go through where the publications, now news, can be used in favor of you to show it's been known these are no good and they will throw false positives. No different than I could tell you the new Abbott point of control, POC, whatever they're calling. That's a new one. That's the new one in the Australian number three example of the test, the serology test, is the point of, I can't remember the C, point of something, point of contact or whatever. That's that test where you saw it. I told you, if you saw the video, it says right in there, advertised, it throws positives in minutes. This thing the test itself is not standardized. It all depends on what your amplification, your cycling amplification limit is. You can get it down to make it too sensitive, like they were talking. So COVID test, overwhelming number of case false positives. He's reciting public news publications you could use that you've got to go back and confirm for you and what you're going to do, how this thing is not. It says here, New York Times, potentially 90% of all those who have tested positive for COVID have such insignificant amounts of the virus present in their bodies that such individuals need not to isolate, nor are they candidates for contact tracing. What do you say for that? You cite that and say that the determination has never been made on the viral load required to be a transmissible person. Now, don't forget, to me it's becoming more important, not the more important, but to me it's very important. You have to be susceptible. The susceptibility feature here is incredibly important to identify. They've never understood susceptibility. Nobody has established a control group that was not susceptible. What am I talking about there? We have technology that's been known, and what did I say it was? I learned it from the East Indian dude, doctor in India, through Indian Times, saying, well, we use the T-cell test. Now, it doesn't tell us exactly what's going on, but it gives a good indication the body is immune from this style of attack because the T cell has been programmed to seek it out and destroy this thing. And if you have that, you're likely to be asymptomatic and you're likely not to be contagious, likely never to be contagious, and likely to be able to live your life like normal prior to COVID-19. COVID-19 fatality rate, worst miscalculation in human history, PhD student in epidemiology reports, goes through a whole bunch of facts. It's not just worse, it's a crime of the century. It's a crime against mankind, what they've pulled off. You can't just say that, though. You have to prove it. And you have to prove it through the pathways I've been explaining. Why? Because your justice system is set up. In one regard, this was done correctly. But what they can use it for is to evade their duty with plausibly. You may even have to, and I don't ask you to do this for the most part generally. I'm looking at that, and I've been doing it actually, but I'm looking at it more strenuously now, to literally out the judiciary to be compliant and why it's evaded its duty, where it has an inherent power to check the things it can judicially notice are wrong. I just said a whole mouthful there, not putting words in your mouth or on paper. You study that subject matter. And now what are you doing? You're bringing into question trust, the question of trust, whether or not the judiciary is anymore sitting in a position to check the law, where they utilize the cover of this primary prerogative power as a cover that they will not disrupt. Yet we know that they are what? They are sitting in aid of it by their dual membership, dual citizens, dual membership in a professions organization. They're not independent of that. They claim to be independent, but that's a lie. And we see that because their decisions aid, abet, foster, encourage crime, essentially, and harm, like you see going on in the world, that is absolutely a direct attack. The court of Florida knew the public health, interfering with public health attacks the economy. If you didn't get that really powerful detail, every nation who ever thinks about this knows if you can affect someone's public, as I've told you, they affect your health, you're useless to yourself, against yourself, against what you need to do in society. And so they affect your health because you're useless to yourself. They affect the health of your little ones because then you're going to deal with your little ones because you're going to do that naturally. They know that. You're taken out of the picture. You can't fight. You're fighting for your little one. So the court recognized you go after health, you necessarily take out the economy of another nation. The 1% blunder, how a simple but fatal math mistake by U.S. COVID experts caused the world to panic and order lockdowns. This is a discussion, very interesting, about how math worked, how they moved a decimal point, how Fauci, the Volpre 2 Fauci, said that it would only be as bad as a severe flu season, which we knew in November. I reported behind a woodshed about that. It was the worst flu season, seasonal influenza season in a decade back. Remember? And last year was the worst up until then. They knew all that. Fauci repeated that. By the time it gets out of that, they move the decimal place 1 point over, and our problem goes 1,000% worse. And they're calling it a blunder. They call it a plan. They call it an interesting way to convince people. But here's the point. That's not an excuse. That math blunder was not supposed to displace or absolve the local official of finding the fact. And this is what you have to continue focusing on. The compliance with the statute that allowed them the power underneath the duty to do a thing that they actually didn't do, but they promote that they did. In other words, they're coming under color that they did, which makes their actions felonies, actually. And so we have the 1% blunder. This is not a blunder. This was a plan. And you can continue to agree that it's a blunder and be quiet, or you can write your letter to show, relative to your local statute, that the official was required to do more. The high bar of primary duty of the state's prerogative in power, police power, required the utmost fidelity to the reality relative to its duty imposed by the legislature. Public health lessons learned from biases in coronavirus mortality overestimation. Cambridge organization, they give us a little study. They explain all this. So we have now a university authority looking at the problem. Looking at the problem, and I'm saying that you're going to have to come back and say, this overestimation wasn't merely a blunder. It was the incompetence, it was the dereliction of duty to do what a health official locally ought to have done, or knew or should have known what they ought to have done in order to perfect the reality that he was faced or she was faced with, not listen to the governor say the sky is falling and then not get out of their chair to walk outside and look up. Now I'm going to hold there. I've got another statement I've advanced to somebody. We're going to hold short there. There's another addition onto that that deals with the mitigation measures. Public health lessons learned from biases in coronavirus mortality. Be careful using this all by itself, because they'll claim up until this notice, they were proceeding in good faith. Be careful not to walk yourself into that potential problem. So all today we're looking at this coronavirus attest, how it's being used. I'm focusing you on a court case, even though it was focused on habeas corpus, a decision in a court case that says that they're looking at your liberties, but they show you how high a bar the state enjoys to be able to defeat your liberties if the three channels, I'll just reduce it to the three, are shown in the record and not rebutted by the record or disproved to be counter to what the official is given permission to do and to say until you say and show otherwise. You have to bring and have the burden to show, not in a small amount, but in a great amount, that they did not do their duty. The things they relied upon were knew or should have known unreliable, could not be relied. Have the proof for why you would say that. Like I said, how I've said it in the previous part of the broadcast, where you would go. There's other proofs as well. And then bring them out of that and show before you have an authority to say anything. You have to conform with doing this thing here, this determination, correctly. Because if you get it wrong, here's a couple of evidences of what happens when you do get it wrong. And it's not a pretty picture. You will necessarily destroy economies. And you walked into this thing like Mary Poppins and thought that umbrella of yours gave you the authority. It didn't. High dose of vitamin D significantly reduced the need for ICU treatment of patients requiring hospitalization due to proven COVID-19. I don't even know where to begin again. You can hear all the lies, but, okay, vitamin D, perfect. Well, didn't we say that there was alternative? Didn't I say repeatedly on this broadcast, nutrition. Is that a perfect protection? Well, no. I've also told you stories that I was in likely perfect health and still got almost taken down by nature. Nature's tough. And I needed the help of modern medicine in one capacity once. And grateful for it. However, not generally. Now, you can bring your nutrition up. We have high dose of vitamin C significantly reduced the need for ICU treatment. I'm proven COVID. We know there's no test. That must be that 6% that the CDC just admitted to that were real, but there is no test for. This is after the fact. What's important about this story is right here, you have effect of calicifediol treatment and the best available therapy versus best available therapy on intensive care unit, admission and mortality among patients hospitalized for COVID-19, a pilot randomized clinical study, hospitalized for COVID-19 is not having it, but this is a vitamin D study that says that when people were fortified with this, what did it do? It reduced the need for ICU treatment, emergency treatment. Here's the thing about this. When you see this type of report, then what you have to go look for when you speak to, or if you want to speak to, the local official is what did they consider? Let's get past the fact you couldn't prove SARS-CoV-2. What, when you started to develop your mitigation, let's get past the fact aren't constituted lawfully in your power you're wielding. Let's get past that for a moment. When you finally believe you did your termination in good faith, what did you do in looking at mitigating your least amount of interference to create the method for how you would treat this? is where the vitamin D stories come in, and why we have then you the why didn't you tell people to start taking vitamin E so that they would limit their exposure to emergency care? If originally your whole point was to limit emergency care. Again, you bring a logic, a proof of a mitigation alternative that they necessarily would have had to speak to because, as I've said before, as you saw in the Australia, Western Australian paper, theirs is one of practicability. Again, because of the high bar prerogative, they have the high bar burden to prove what they're deciding is ultimately what has to happen, and there's no other way they could get around this problem. And when you look at that and you say, well, they should have had actually had some suggestion even to vitamin D, and as you said, we said zinc, not getting a hydroxychloroquine, but zinc and vitamin C, and have your nutrition up, have the county come out fighting nutrition. None of that made the press in the local counties. That was more than we're going to have to wait for an injection that we've known is criminal, problematic. It's criminal. So this vitamin D story, and there's lots of them, comes in a section of your discussion, a letter or a complaint, petition, where once you get past, in the alternative, if the court finds they had a duly constituted authority, now we're facing the mitigation measures and the failure to look at alternatives. Here's a proof. Okay, do you understand the logic here on how you move? You don't, I told you, it might be a step. You start your battle on the line, and you may have to step back, but you give yourself places to step back too. The battle's not lost, even if you're forced by hook or by crook to concede they have a lawfully constituted authority. You then plant yourself down, and now you hit them with the extent of what their strategy was and how they determined it, firstly. And then you get to throw in the fact, well, you presumed the PCR, but it didn't actually prove it. Because it could be bacterial infections or other things, how does your plan encompass this problem with the PCR? We now see as proven in the CDC admitting obesity was one of the main causes, that heart conditions were one of the main causes, influenza itself was one of the main causes, other than symptoms. How did you account for that? And as in one of the jurisdictions I'm helping, I realize now we got a piece of news from years ago, they knew about obesity and diabetes and malnutrition as a problem. And so they don't have they can't take good reliance on the current aspects. And that's how you have to get at them. It's how you cut the onion and get down to all the layers. They may have an awesome power, but it comes with obligations as well. And this is where it's going. This is finally coming out. Again, I don't know what more to say. I guess when the celebrities say it and all the people with celebrities say it, I guess it's finally so. Not when the guy behind the woodshed says so. Yeah, I'm feeling a little bit scruffled. Not because for me. It's for all y'all that have been suffering when there wasn't any need. COVID-19 equals climate change. The more afraid you are, the more you will accept. Perfect title. You've heard that behind the woodshed. What Greta didn't get done leading up to COVID-19, COVID-19 is accomplishing. How many times have you heard me say that? Greta was fine. Greta with the Euro E, Greta was fine with COVID relative to watching it destroy your economy, your way of life, imposing everything that the Modernization Act of the United States brought in 2011 to 2015 did that I told you, that brings on what? Climate change. What is that actually? Sustainable development. And if you can't see the earmarks, if not the fact of sustainable development written all over this thing, well, maybe I should say shame on you. Not just a complaint, oh yeah, I saw it. No. What did you do to stop it, and how do you stop it? That's what I try to come up with. If I haven't been able to stop it, I try to help people. How do we figure out how to stop it? This is a vast problem. We needed all hands on deck. The ship is sinking. I don't know about if you heard about that cattle ship going on from New Zealand to wherever it was going. 5,800 cattle sank, killed all the cattle. That's you. The one chief operator that got saved said the motor stopped and we got broadsided by a wave. And it sank. That's the ship of state you're on, all your cattle. Because why? You're acting like cattle instead of looking at how you're not, shouldn't you actually be on that boat? How it's supposed to be operated correctly. How it's supposed to be properly maintained. At any rate, COVID-19 equals climate change. Perfect. What Greta didn't do, this COVID's doing. Austerity, lack of food, them controlling everything. E-government, e-everything, digital currency, everything's coming through this. So this was on Climatism blog. I don't really want to talk too much more about it, but it does show, I think it was a Tucker Carlson video. He's a celebrity. He now gets to tell you, he gets to be the hero explaining by question, maybe this thing's the wrong thing. Showing you what the same guy at the who did the characterized as a pandemic statement is telling you COVID is actually moving climate change forward. The strings are coming together to create the noose, the cord that's going to strangle this country and all countries under the thing I've suggested to you strongly by evidence, if you didn't believe it, that this was coming together. COVID is climate change, but it's more. It's more. It's sustainable development. We sued this in 2013. Jefferson Mining District with the chairman as one party, myself and the assembly as another part of it, because of the way the dynamic of the case was and allowed me to be able to respond directly and not have to go through, even though we don't have a problem with the chairman doing that. There was a potential we would have to bifurcate the case, and I wanted to be able to take it a different way. 2013, we sued this very thing to stop it. We told, after the default judgment, we told Trump he would be the only officer that's capable under international law to deal with this. We told him, we sent him notes 3 or 4 times. He failed to answer us. So to me, this is a foregone conclusion. This is a plan. Finally, Tucker Carlson speaks it out. Now everybody's sending the Twitters around, the links around, that this is a medical tyranny, and it's agreed to where the direction is by this WHO doctor that's not a medical doctor, who are making all the determinations on this. Why? Partly because you're not stepping up. Somebody refers to, and I found this interesting, that was retweeted. I just get a link to this. I don't know who these people are. I just see them. It's interesting to me. I wanted to supply this. People see the things, but no one's responding to them. But finally, okay, finally we get here. We still have to respond to it. But my sentiments, as this one lawn grower says, my sentiments exactly sprung up on us by a faulty computer model, Neil Ferguson, Imperial College, using ridiculous assumptions which have never been correct. What on earth? The assumptions that masks and lockdowns can prevent a virus from spreading. Oh, the hubris. Perfect. Okay, so now what, though? Now people see it. It's climate change, though. This is sustainable development. It's a federal, international imposition coming down on you that your local officials are aiding and abetting. We identified that in our lawsuit in 2013. It's in every governor. That's why you don't see a difference between them all. I sent out this connection with Greta to the climate change way back, I think, April Fool's Day, Wednesday Wisdom, one of my reposts for the broadcast the week before, COVID-19 symptoms kill. You know, that's not what I meant. This is sarcastic. COVID-19 symptoms kill. Sure. Symptoms kill. That's what you were under then. You were told then symptoms were killing you. But COVID-19 symptoms kill. Greta, with the Euro-E, Greta is cool with she got 3-upped by a rogue common cold, presumptively. BS science. BS science. Voluntary quarantine. That's you all. Voluntary quarantine. Not a live exercise taking properties, rights, and dignity. Distance learning, Census Day 2020, April Fools. I'm kind of disgusted here. I'm talking about everybody not moving. The connection to Greta has been gone on and on. It's just now, this nation's just now getting the celebrity on the point. another connection to Greta and everything else that's been, not every, other things that have been involved consistent with this global imposition. The local health rules of which could have, can still stop this, but you're going to have to step up in the proper way to do it. How difficult they're making this. Child exploitation to promote political fraud, punitive harms, and war crimes from a Sputnik leak. Operation Greta. A teenage girl with a piercing stare and psychological issues, and quote from the story, sustainably exploiting trauma-based carbon units officially since 1992. Eat people, they say. Folks, this has been a long time coming. Finally, celebrity gets it, and I'm just dismayed. We as a population are just talking about it. It's still a question. What's the importance of this? Do I just tell you, oh, look, at I was telling you all along? No, this has, it's all connected, right, Grimner? Something I pointed out to you years and years ago. What's important about this is why you, what you may have to bring up in your court petitions is challenging the Bar Association member itself. Why this thing has been going on. American Bar Association adopted by the House of Delegates August 12th, 13th, 2013. Why is this important? These bar members are your judges and your attorneys. Why, I claim, no attorney across the nation has done the right argument but accepted the governor's orders, the same governors that are involved with promoting sustainable development. Says in their own House delegates resolution that they promote and support sustainable development. This is not new news. It's all connected. Right, Grimner? I don't know what more to say. Proof? I'll give you the link. If you can't believe it, you can read it yourself. I've been pushing this stuff off onto you, hoping that someone would pay attention. This is where it's coming together. I'm not pushing sustainable development. I'm telling you that that's what you show is why the decisions aren't coming pursuant to the law. Remember, they're doing adjective policy. They're not doing law. They're doing that reactive stuff. Resolved that the American Bar Association reaffirms its 1991 and 2003 commitments to sustainable development and defines sustainable development as, quote, the promotion of an economically, socially, and environmentally sustainable future for our planet and for present and future generations. Further resolved that the American Bar Association urges all governments, lawyers, and ABA entities to act in ways that accelerate progress toward sustainability. Further resolved that the American Bar Association encourages law schools, legal education providers, and other concerned with professional development to foster sustainability in their facilities and operations and to help promote a better understanding of the principles of sustainable development in relevant fields of law. Now, I've been through this discussion before. I'm not going to get into it anymore. If you don't hear the connection between the effects of what this COVID-19 fraud has done and this, and why you don't see the courts deciding in the law, maybe you should take another look at it. I'm saying here, you see this, you realize the guy on the bench and the attorneys that would come to present a defense for you will, where they can get away with it, not present the proper argument and not give you the proper lawful answer. And that requires ever so subtly and ever so tactfully that you put the bar member, the judge, on into the case as a potential problem. You cast a shadow on the trust of the judiciary. You can't just say that without representing what? That they have never found contrary to the power, notwithstanding the failure, that they have been, that as an organizational intention, they have shown that they will promote what we see happening in the states. You show another point. You show as many points as you can to show that had the judiciary, who are these bar members, actually looked at the law and not evaded their duty by under the color of the excuse that they would not disrupt the legislature, instead of looking at the facts on the ground, that they are looking, at least looking, and that there's an appearance of impropriety. Now you bring the court into question. Is one more facet of why you have to do that. When you don't, then they just get by the fact of the rebuttal that they're independent. They don't do anything more than neutral, blind justice. And that's how they play that. We're blind to more than we tell you, and we tell you the governor's right. And you have to take that blindfold and lift it and say, but you have a duty to judicial notice, where you also have a duty, an inherent power, to check the excesses of the executive. Now we're getting into separation of powers conditions. We're totally outside of public health now, aren't we? And this is how they've done it. They use these things under the color of these frauds in order to get at the more fundamental things. If you don't understand this, you're no way are capable of even defending yourself. And your republic, what you think is this government that does keep you peaceful to most extents, and their job is to do that in order to keep you from being riled up, is going to press harder on what they need in the new normal, in the transformation. Somebody else, to show you how integrated the sustainable development vernacular is in people's awareness. A Crave Creative, something I responded to on Twitter, excited something happened in Kanuckistan, or I don't remember now what it was. Somebody up in VC or something up there, Parksville, British Columbia, Vancouver Island, and was excited that they were doing some so-called common law. But I want to read you something here. Nothing against her, other than how easy it is for youngins to take on this vocabulary. See, folks, this is how it's done. Community strength in numbers, standing together and fighting for a common cause. Use against the establishment. The UN has infiltrated our hometowns, and most of us don't even know it. Our fighters start at the community level. Cheers. And to some extent, perfect. What I point out is, watch out what you done there. And then I point out all the UN terminology she used, like common strength in numbers, or the common cause, community level, anything community is communitarian speak. Integrated in someone who wants to be free. The cancer is already inside the terminology that she represents to others, thinking that she is speaking in freedom and so-called common law to do something about it. The problem with that is, if you don't recognize that cancer in you, that brain control, you're not going to recognize what you really have to do. Again, no offense to her at all, but this is how subtle this cancer has become. It's in us, and we don't really recognize it. It's in all of you. Somehow, that fever I got kind of burned it out of me. Trial by fire, maybe. It burnt that thought out of me. I was able to see this stuff. I can identify easily, and most easily, Vince, how this works. A lot of you can too. But this is an insidiousness that we have to check for each other. We really have to protect ourselves from each other. So when I say stay a sustainable development, don't roll your eyes or say, I know. It's in us. It's everything. You know, community policing is the very same thing. Your enhanced 911 is this thing. Your bar association is this thing. All your governors is this thing. And it's going to take an enlightened, wise public population in order to work through how to overcome it. And I'm just trying to get a couple people to start focusing on a couple of foundational points to start with and see where that goes. It's still going to be a battle. But I still believe at some point we have one of two paths, or three paths. One, we do nothing and it overruns us. Two is we try and they still defeat us, but we then show and have a record of the problem, not our opinion of it. Or we force that embarrassment that if they decide, and it's so clearly stated how the problem is, we have no excuse we can bring that won't be outed by these people because they're that aware. And then they can't go to the extent they wanted to. And it's not over, but you've checked it. You've stopped the progress that the Bar Association says it's going to promote to bring the very harms and disasters on you that they're allowing the judges to do, and never looking at whether or not the state, when they bring a remedy against a suit, whether or not they had standing by the point of whether or not they fulfilled the duty and are constitutionally constituted underneath the legislature's mandate. That's what you challenge. Polio vaccine causing polio outbreaks in Africa. Who admits Children, Defense, and Health is the reporter? Do I need to say more? This is now admitted. And you'll find in the story the Gates Foundation is involved with doing polio vaccines of something that they claimed weeks before, a week or so before, was eradicated. They then produced a new novel version into society and gave hundreds of babies polio. Is what they want to do for you with their WHO vaccine that professes that they're going to make sure it's safe and effective. These are the same guys that are lying to you over the fact that COVID-19 was a health matter, plausibly denying the fact that it's only as pandemic, and then admitting that this whole thing is really just another agenda to ruin your way of life, transform society. And if you want to find out more about these companies behind these vaccines and what the inside, some of the inside is, I found, I think this was sent to me by another emailer, The Jab, featuring GlaxoSmithKline from the Children's Health Defense, I think, is what I was sent in the email, and it explains this connection to why the Big Pharma, Harma, and how the WHO is a broker for it, not helping you. And so I've talked about all the brokerage of WHO, not the rock group and not the owl, but this World Health Organization, how it is what it is, and that it's not what it says. So we have some work to do. We have a defense. My view is you focus in right in on the duty that's not been fulfilled, that the legislature required of the officials, that the court will do, that you have the burden to show reasonableness or lack of abuse. But I think it's very easy to do. I think you can certainly use what I've told you for months and months to be able to line out a complaint about this. And I think it's plausible. I think when more of us do it, they really will have a problem. They really will have to start to do something. As long as you stay silent, they win. And they're doing it on a point, it's like almost an unscalable mountain in a way. But, I mean, any of you veterans know in a firefight and you got to take out somebody, sometimes providence was on your side. Sometimes you're just your will. How many heroes do we have? The last guy protecting a whole bunch of wounded people. He fights to the bitter end and wins. I mean, because he won't give up and won't stop is what we're up against here. You can't just sit back on this and not think that polio's not coming to you, that whatever the real thing they want to put in you, we hear all the horror stories of what this new vaccine's going to do. What are they wanting for you is not you stepping up and saying, that's not me, and properly. Oh, yeah, you resist. You say, oh, no, it's not going to happen. But they're coming down with pressure, and they'll come down with the force and the military force to make it so. And it'll be a shame that none of you, particularly the ones that listen to me, none of you will have a word in your mouth to pre-position your record and so to have a buffer and then come in with the proper discussion like I've had today, more technically, relative to what they're promoting as their cause. Grimner, thank you for what you do at reallibertymedia.com. Appreciate everything you do there to keep us up and giving me a place to put the blogcaster links that everyone can go to. The Sound Minds, UCY.TV, thank you for that, and the commenters there in normalization of ignorance. Appreciate your posts. Everybody who thumbs up or resends it out, I appreciate all that. I'll be with you next week. Tech diffs or nature willing.
Well, that's another lesson. I hope with today's information you can take it to those that misbehave. From behind the woodshed, leaving his mark on the beast, this is Hal Anthony. Till next time, journey with purpose.
Up a can of whoop-ass feels like.
Son, you just opened a whole case of whoop-ass.